I feel like it's often the case that like futuristic movies will go too far in the like futuristic costuming direction, and I'm like, that just becomes not convenient anymore. I don't think people are gonna do that in the future, but
They're not gonna be wearing giant spikes on their shoulders.
no. Or like there's always like the futuristic like jumpsuits, like the single like just skin tight, and I'm like, no.
How are you going to the
Yeah, that's one of the problems that that brings up.
bathroom?
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two White Girls Talk Bollywood. I'm Kim.
And I'm Katie, and we're here to talk about singing and dancing and really just like Indian boys. Like,
Yeah.
it's a pan-Indian film,
It's a
right?
pan-Indian film. I guess technically a Tollywood film since it's a Telugu language film, but we've got stars from all over the place in this one, and it's great to see.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Some that I was not expecting, which we'll talk about when we get to
Looking forward to
it.
that.
Yes, I liked that
Yeah.
hairstyle. But yeah, Kim, what did you think of Kalki 2898 AD?
Yes, I really enjoyed it. And it wasn't perfect. Like, there are definitely some things that I'm like, eh, I would have done that differently. But I had so much fun watching it. And I think the best compliment that I can pay it, like, this is a 3-hour movie. I usually watch our movies, even the ones that are 2 hours, in two sittings, and I stop at intermission. I didn't want to stop. I kept watching. I watched the whole 3-hour movie in one night. Because I was just like, I just want to see more. I'm excited.
I know. Yeah, and I love that. I agree. I agree with that assessment too. Like, there's a few things, especially looking back through my notes, that I was like, was this person really necessary? Or like, they're
There was a
probably
lot of
going to become
that.
important later, you know? Because this is clearly the first installment in a franchise.
Right.
But yeah, there were some threads that I was just like, that's not tied up in this film.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that overall it was really good. And honestly, I was expecting it to be a little less original. Because obviously, there's common themes across these like dystopian
Sure.
sci-fi films, like, and that's totally fine. But like, I was watching this and I was so invested in all the different characters and like the storyline and what was happening. Actually, I was like, no, yes, this has some tropes that are present throughout the genre, which you would expect, but it feels like its own original thing. And it's
Yeah.
like a little like Mad Max, a little
Yeah.
bit Star Wars, like I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm excited for the other installments too.
Me too. Yeah, I made the note that I do feel like this, like, you can see clear inspiration from various sources of, in particular kind of Western films. And it's not enough like any one of them for me to say like, well, this feels like a ripoff of this, that, or the other. And also, there's obviously all of the Hindu mythology that's woven in, I think, really well. And I also just feel like, and we'll talk about
Oh my God, he's incredible.
Yeah, I was
It
really
just
into him.
takes over the screen. I know, I have goosebumps. Oh my God, I blown away.
Yeah, but like,
I'm in love with that man.
yeah, just like the way, like his, I've been experiencing a good amount of Telugu cinema in the last like few months, and I just feel like it just felt very like tropey in a positive way of like, yeah, this is the way that a Telugu hero is gonna move through this movie, and so it just, like, yeah, there's the Western inspiration, but this is also very clearly a South Asian film. And I love that. I really enjoyed it. And yeah, I do, like, a lot of the criticism I was reading was saying that, like, the first half was boring. I didn't find the first
I
half
didn't.
boring. I was busy falling in love with Prabhas.
Me too. Yeah, because he has like that like Han Solo kind of like
Yes.
swagger, but like with more genuine goofiness. Like he's more
Yeah.
down to earth
And just,
and nicer
yeah, and
than
just.
Han
Just
Solo.
a little bit more incompetence,
Yes, but
which
also
makes him
like
more charming.
super competent though.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
They struck a really
No.
good balance. Like the writing and his performance, I loved it. I wrote that he was a scoundrel at one point, because Han Solo is also a scoundrel, but he's like maybe a little bit more of, yeah, like a nice guy scoundrel.
Yes, agreed. Kalki was written and directed by Nag Ashwin. Mm-hmm. And our cast, in no particular order, we have Prabhas as Bhairava, Amitabh Bachchan as Ashwatthama, Deepika Padukone as M80.
Yep.
I then do switch to calling her Sumati. Saswata Chatterjee as Manas. Yeah, you never learn his name. You would only know his name if you looked it up, but he's the bad guy.
Oh, he's the, okay, he's like the general.
Correct. Yeah, Commander Manas. Yes. Yes.
I didn't realize until just now that I never knew what his name was.
Yeah, they don't mention his name. I had to pause for that. Yeah, so that's the cast. And before we start our plot recap, you said that you wanted to touch upon some of the mythology aspects, which I know I would appreciate because I did not take a religion class in college.
And I also, like, a lot of this didn't really come out of the Hinduism class that I took a couple years ago. But I wanted to just give a teensy tiny bit of context to two of the mythological references. There's obviously a ton in this movie, but it's very rooted in the Mahabharata, which I haven't read, but I want to. It seems really cool and interesting. But that's where, like, all the stuff with Ashwatthama and Arjuna and, the killing of the unborn baby, that all happens in the Mahabharata. And Karna's in there. But let's start with our title, Kalki.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so the Kalki Purana is about the 10th iteration of Vishnu, Lord Vishnu, and that iteration, or that avatar will be called Kalki, hasn't happened yet, is the much-awaited, quote-unquote, promised messiah of Hinduism.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I was getting this from a Western media source, so that's the terminology that they're using. There are periods of time that are called yugas.
Yes, yes.
And so, yeah, and so
they talk about that.
So Kalki is going to show up at the end of like this time of like grief and suffering and badness, and then Kalki is going to show up, and then the yuga that Kalki's around for is like the golden age.
Right.
So it's a little, it's, you know, we can draw similarities to this of like various Abrahamic religions and particularly Christianity, the idea of like Christ's second coming and like that's the time when all the sinners go away,
right? Yes.
And all the, you know, the righteous people have their milk and honey and all that stuff.
Yeah.
What is also interesting about the title of the movie, Kalki 2898 AD, some Hindu texts suggest that the last yuga prior to the one we're in now ended in 3102 BCE, and that the following yuga, which is the one leading up to Kalki's birth, would take 6,000 years.
Uh-huh.
So we do the calculation,
right?
And here we are, 2898 AD, with Kalki's arrival.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Also, sorry, we forgot to mention the movie's visually stunning.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So incredible.
So incredible to look at. Yeah.
I just want to mention that now because I think we're going to get really into the plot and what's happening and not necessarily talk about how incredible this is just as like a viewing experience, but like,
absolutely,
it's worth mentioning. Yeah.
Yeah.
Loved it.
Yes. Thank you for making time for that observation because it's an important one.
Yeah. Okay. Are we ready?
I think so.
Whew. Deep breaths. So, the opening credits show a very cool and very intense war scene. Mm-hmm. We then see a man named Ashwatthama pick a plant from the earth and pray to the creator Brahma, saying, "Upon whose arrival all the enemies bite the dust." He calls for the end of the Pandavas, and the plant burns up. We then see a pregnant woman in a palace. She's carrying the heir of the Pandavas. And at Ashwatthama's prayer, an ominous thunderstorm starts, and a bolt of lightning energy strikes her right in the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Back on the battleground, Ashwatthama is approached by Krishna. Ashwatthama thinks that Krishna will kill him to uphold the karma of firing a shot at an unborn child. But Krishna says that death is not a punishment in this case, but salvation. In the near future, the Pandavas will die out, Krishna's body will die, the Yuga will end, and Ashwatthama will continue on, his wounds never healing and suffering alone. Mm-hmm. Krishna curses him to live this way for 6,000 years. And then he says that Ashwatthama must save his future reincarnation, Kalki. We then get an animated sequence showing the world falling apart over the course of these 6,000 years. So nature gets destroyed, cities literally explode, and there's violence everywhere. And Ashwatthama lives through it all, finally retreating to an old temple. And now this is the age of Kalki.
Yes.
Then 6,000 years later, after that opening battle scene, we see a hovercraft moving through the desert. I also call these, like, sometimes I call them transports, sometimes hovercraft, sometimes cars, trucks, I don't know, vehicles.
A futuristic vehicle.
Yeah, yeah. And a girl dressed as a boy, her name is Raya. I'm just going to name these people what they're called as they show up, because it was very difficult to figure out what people's names were.
Yeah.
Because it took a while for them to mention it. But Raya drags her hand through the sand and finds a little flower, which just isn't done here. They're in the middle of the desert.
Yeah, it's a desolate place.
Yeah. Conditions are bad, obviously, and all the people on this transport are traveling to Kashi, the last city standing in the world.
Yeah.
Whoa. So they arrive at Kashi, and things are really bleak. There's a fence separating the people from Supreme Yaskin, the 200-year-old leader of the complex. An old man on the transport named Rumi says that Yaskin is sucking all the resources from the planet. We also learn that mentions of any god are banned in Kashi. Mm-hmm. So the transport arrives at a shop, and the shopkeeper immediately separates the girls out because a fertile female is worth 10,000 units. This is when a younger boy accompanying the group outs Raya, but she has already disappeared. Rumi, the old man, finds her and takes her to a bunker full of rebels. And they mention a place called Shambhala, which is their, like, home base. And Rumi says that the mother is coming. And then he reveals a pregnant woman that he has found. And by the mother, they mean the woman who is carrying the future god, the reincarnation that will be Kalki.
Yep.
Raya watches on as Rumi does a test to see if the pregnant woman is carrying Kalki, but she is not. But then the bunker gets raided, and in the chaos, the device to figure out who is carrying the future god breaks. But it had this jewel in it that Raya picks up and kind of carries with her.
Yeah. Also, bringing up cameos as they happen, this is Mrunal Thakkar.
Oh!
Love her so much.
Yes!
I knew she had a cameo, and I was hoping it would be more robust than this.
I completely, wow. Yeah, missed that. I was in it. I was,
you
like,
were taking notes diligently. Yeah.
Flying right now. Yeah. So everyone escapes the bunker except for Rumi and the pregnant woman, who are captured and brought to the gates of the complex. The gates open and the Supreme's right-hand guy, Manas, emerges. Manas orders that the pregnant girl be taken to the lab so that her womb can be removed and, quote, used freshly.
Gross.
The treatment of women's bodies in this movie, to no one's surprise, is abhorrent.
It's almost like it's America. Women have no purpose unless they're pregnant.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oof. Yeah. But okay. Rumi begs him not to hurt this woman, and Manas says, okay, tell me the way to Shambhala. But Rumi won't betray that secret, and the pregnant girl tells him not to tell Manas anything because she'll die either way. Sure enough, Manas shoots her in the stomach and she dies. Manas then addresses the crowd, telling them that there is only one god, Supreme Yaskin. Manas then kills Rumi. And the teens, the rebel teens from the bunker, have been watching this whole time, and one of them cries out when Rumi dies. So then Manas tells his guards to find the kids, offering 5,000 units for every kid captured. The kids are trying to outrun Manas' guards when a robot car arrives and claims one of the kids as its bounty. This car's name is Bougie.
Bougie's excellent.
Bougie is the best. Bougie is great and, like, really great comedic effect, but like I also cut out a lot of the fun stuff that Bougie does. Apologies.
That's okay. I will also interject here to say that there is a like animated short series on Amazon. It's Bougie and Bairava.
That's cute.
It's like 2 15-minute episodes. I watched it yesterday morning and it's adorable.
Oh, that's fun.
Highly recommend.
I like that. And the original shopkeeper from the start of the film, who you would think is not important, but keeps showing up.
I hate this guy.
I hate this guy too. He's here. Doesn't have a name. I mean, whatever. And he wants the bounty for himself, so he tries to shoot the robot. And then the robot calls its boss. And we get an epic arrival from Bairava. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he is, like, super cool. And he has super cool background music.
Yep.
He's just great. He's a vibe. Like, a capital V vibe.
Yeah. Diljit Dosanjh did singing for his backup music. Yeah.
The music, honestly, also the music in this movie is really good. I think they do a great job of setting the tone.
Yes.
Which is wonderful. But yeah, so Bairava is, like, not super into the idea of fighting some people. Like, he wants to take a nap, but he also, like, his main goal in life is to make it into the complex.
Yeah.
That's all he cares about. So in order to make it into the complex, he needs to have money, because the whole thing is if you raise, like, 1 million units, mm-hmm. you can buy your way into living in the complex.
Right.
So after he talks about all of this, blah, 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 Bairava tells Bougie to play a nice song to get him in fight mode. Mm-hmm. And Bougie does. And Bairava starts dancing.
Yeah.
The charisma. It's so good. Now, I will say, just as a sidebar, I am considering rewatching Bahubali.
I totally want to watch more movies with Prabhas in it. I was also going to say he's the rebel star. That's his, like, kind of subtitle as an actor. Mm-hmm. And so, that's like, fun. When he shows up and, like, it says, like, Bougie's little, like, screen display says, like, rebel next to his name. It's, like, rebel and then a star.
Aww.
Yeah. I know that some people might not like that kind of fourth wall breaking. I like it.
I do, too. I mean, it's the kind of fourth wall breaking that you don't notice unless you know.
Right.
Like, I didn't notice that. But now that I'm like, oh, that's cute. It's like a little Easter egg. But he then casually throws, like, a mini grenade. He's got these, like, marbles that are, like, mini grenades. They're awesome.
He's got a lot of cool toys.
I am a little confused as to, like, when he's killing people versus when he's not. Uh-huh. I think for the most part, he's not killing people. He's just beating them up. Because he's actually a very nice boy.
He is a nice boy. maybe not a nice boy you take home to mom, but still a nice guy.
No, he's, like, the ideal, because he's, like, the bad boy rebel, but truly with a heart of gold.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, Bairava casually throws a mini grenade at some bad guys and laughs, but then he gets shot, like, a giant hole through the middle. And I was like, Ouch. Oh, God, that's it for him.
What if it had been?
I would have been very sad. But it's not a wrap for Bairava, because he was a hologram.
Yeah.
Cool. Bairava does a lot of fun hologram things, and then he beats a bunch of dudes up. And so while this is happening, the teens try to escape. So Bairava goes after them to reclaim his bounty, because, again, he wants money. As he does, he has to fight more guys, including 2 ridiculous Bane lookalikes.
Uh-huh.
Yep, that was fun. They were a fun duo. And in this fight, we also get a classic slow motion look at Bairava's straining bicep.
Ugh.
Because you gotta have it.
He has really nice arms.
He has very nice arms, yeah, for sure. I like his tattoo.
I want to make sure to talk about, in this recap, all of the things that I find attractive about Prabhas. So
his
arms,
hair.
I'll check that off the list. Yeah. I like his, like, scruffy neck beard.
Oh, yeah, that's really good. I really like the bun. Like, the, yes, like, kind of half too. Up, half down. Really, whatever his hair's doing, I'm here for it.
Solid.
I got distracted.
Understandable.
It's also just his whole, it's his energy.
His voice, too. Like, the minute he, like, said a line, I was like, is that what this man sounds like?
Wonderful.
It was instantaneous for me. I went from not knowing who he was to wanting to marry him instantly.
That's the power of a good voice.
Yeah.
So Bhairava recollects the teen with the bounty on his head. There's now only one. I think the others escaped. If there ever were others in the first place, I don't really remember. Whatever. He's got this one rebel teen. And then he very casually fights more guys until he just is like, I'm over it, and blows up a bridge with his fist.
Yeah.
And this is like a super cute and charming scene because there's like nice music and then they're all just kind of floating through the sky.
Yeah. He's like looking at the complex, yeah, like wistfully. Like,
yeah. Yeah. And after the fight, Bhairava is told by an old man that he should be the protector of Kashi, and he kind of just blows it off. He's kind of lazy. Like he's like,
yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
I don't want responsibility.
Yeah, no. Meanwhile, Sumati wakes up in the complex labs. She's one of the women that they're trying to get pregnant, but in the meantime, she helps take care of the women who are actually pregnant, like, mm-hmm. while she is waiting.
Yep. Between seedings.
Yes, between seedings. The fact that they call them seedings, ew.
So gross.
Ew. Elsewhere in the complex, Manas asks for an update on Project K. He is told that the formula the Supreme developed is too strong for human DNA, and it puts the fertile women in danger. But Manas is under pressure from the Supreme, so he tells the scientists to extract the serum of the most far along pregnant woman. The process fails, and the woman dies. I also still have no clue what this serum actually is, what it does, what the goal with it is.
Apparently the goal is immortality. I learned that in reading about some of the mythology stuff.
Okay, well, that's really helpful to know.
Yeah. I didn't really get that from the movie either.
I bet we'll get this in the future, maybe.
Sometime.
In a second movie, maybe it'll be more clear.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. But then the scientist tells Manas that the experiment will keep failing unless they know what the Supreme is actually trying to do.
Yeah.
Great question.
Be really helpful.
So they go to see Supreme. He's sitting cross-legged, hovering in the air, and he injects himself with the serum that they extracted. And it turns out that the scientist was trying to assassinate the Supreme. Mm-hmm. The Supreme survives, though, saying that he's offered so many lives to death that death will not come near him. He then kills the scientist by feeding him one of his tears.
Yeah.
Whoa.
he's toxic.
What a thing. And you know, actually, yeah, now that you're mentioning that it's like immortality, so he has a whole speech where he's just like, humans are defective. And then it kind of makes sense and why it's like a big deal that this guy lived to be 200.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. So as he kills the scientist, again, feeding him one of his tears.
Uh-huh.
He says that the serum he created will cure humanity of its defect.
It's not just humans who die. A lot of things die.
A lot. Like, it's literally the circle of life. Yeah.
Yeah. The circle of life.
Okay. And also, you're killing everything on the planet. You're causing... Whatever. I'm confused as to what he's doing with the energy. Like, why did you have to destroy the planet?
Yeah.
What's your purpose, sir? Who are
you? He's a bit of a confusing villain. Yeah. Who is this guy?
Who elected you as mayor?
Excuse me, Mr. Yaskin.
I gotta tell you guys, if you encounter someone who's like, call me the Supreme, y'all should not give that person power.
I would vote the other way.
Yeah. But anywho, the Supreme tells Manas to find the woman who can carry a child for 150 days. And I was like, what's the significance of 150 days? That's nothing. I don't know. It made sense to me when it was like, because, okay, let me just, I know we have a lot to get through, but I do feel like it's important to mention this. Uh-huh. My original theory when they were rounding up women, I thought that the Supreme was just trying to get every woman who could possibly be fertile to prevent the birth of Kalki.
Ah.
Because I was like, sure, if you have all the pregnant women under your roof, or not pregnant women, but any of the women who are able to become pregnant, then you can kind of keep an eye on that and keep it from happening so that you're never destroyed by, like, God.
It's a good theory.
But that's not what was happening.
No.
It was like something, it was a completely other subplot.
He had unclear motives that then, do somewhat make sense, but also, like, it's just evil. His motives are evil. He wants to do evil, commit evil. Yeah. I forgot that this was where I was just catching up in my notes because I wasn't doing a good job of that. Just to go back, I really do like that the way that they get up to Supreme Leader Yasuke is the humongous man who, the, like, elevator man who just lifts them up.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was so cool. I've never seen anything like that before. I liked it.
No, I agree. It was just like, yeah, I would have loved to be, like, in the artist's room for this movie because some of the concepts, it was just very, very cool.
Very cool.
There's so much material out there that they could have very easily just ripped everything off, but, like, they didn't. Like, we talked about. Felt original. But anyway, back in her quarters, Tsumati checks on her belly, and we learn that she's 5 months along.
Yeah.
She hasn't told anyone about the pregnancy, but her friend Lily ends up finding out. Then we're back with Bairava, who's transporting the rebel teen. He's kind of just, like, driving him around with him as he's going around places. And the teen asks Bairava to join the rebel cause, but Bairava says that you shouldn't pick sides. You should only be on your own side. Mm-hmm. We then get his backstory, and we learn that Bairava was orphaned in the war. And then he was taken in by Dulker Salman.
His dad, Dulker Salman.
What? I was like, wait a second, is that DQ? And sure enough, it was.
I was really excited because we had talked before about the fact that DQ had a cameo in this movie.
Yeah.
But the week before we were doing the recording, you were, like, looking through the cast list. You didn't see him.
No.
And I was like, oh, my God, I don't think Katie remembers.
I did
and so
not.
I was like, she's going to be so excited.
I really was.
I very intentionally didn't say anything.
I really, really was. And honestly, I'm still not convinced that he won't show up again.
I really hope that he does. I would love to see that.
I mean, he also just might never show up because he might be dead, but...
He might be dead. Yeah, well, that was the thing with all the cameos, was like, I don't know, is this setting up a cinematic universe? Or is this just...
Fun cameos.
Let's just have Dulker Salman show up here, too.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm here for him doing anything. Yeah.
However he shows up, we want to see it.
Yeah. But yeah, so Bairava was taken in by DQ, who it goes by Captain. His name's Captain in this movie. Mm-hmm. And Captain took care of him and taught him to fight with cool lightsabers. He was basically like his little apprentice.
Yeah.
Until the day that Captain bet everything and lost and decided to sell Bairava off to another guy to cover his debts and hopefully move to the complex. But just like Captain had taught him, Bairava betrayed him before he could be betrayed.
Yeah.
And as Captain is led away by guards, he tells Bairava that he did the right thing and he should never change.
Yeah.
That's rough.
It is rough. But I'm glad that he was supportive of his decision.
Yeah, he was just like, whoa, man, you outplayed me. Good job.
Yeah. The student becomes the master.
Nice. I'd watch that buddy movie.
That was what they wrote in the first draft of the script. Nice.
Nice. High five, bro. So Bairava comes out of this flashback when Buji tells him that three armed men are breaking into his house. Mm-hmm. Bairava goes to check it out and has a ridiculous exchange with three men whom he owes money. And then a woman named Roxy shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Disha Patani.
I recognize Disha Patani from her waistline.
Oh, yeah. I don't know how her organs fit in there. She has incredible abs. Wow.
Yeah.
And I liked her sass.
I did, too. I wouldn't have minded seeing more of this character, but
yeah.
Alas, she is not long for this franchise.
Yeah. I thought we were going to get more of her as well. We don't really know what happens to her, but
that's
hopefully
true.
She's alive.
She does just, like, fully disappear from the story.
Yeah. Because, yeah, Roxy shows up. She's also looking for money, and she scares everyone else off and then reveals that she got a job at the complex.
Yeah.
And Bairava asks Roxy to take him to the complex. And after some back and forth, she agrees to take him.
Mm-hmm.
The back and forth does involve him telling her he loves her like he means it. And it did make my heart skip a beat.
It did me too, yeah.
Yeah, and originally I was like, that's not important. But, like, it is important.
But maybe it is important. Yeah.
It's important to call attention to.
I'm glad you mentioned it because I was sitting here like, should I interject to talk about how much I liked that moment? No,
I
won't.
It's a good moment. It got me.
Yep.
It got me. Guys, Promise is a good actor. Who knew?
Hey, in entire other industry. Were you aware?
I know you got
something good going here.
I know you needed me, a white woman in the U.S., to tell you that. So here you go.
Here it is. Yep. We hope you like them.
You're welcome. So anyway, Roxy successfully gets Byrava into the complex for an hour. She takes him to the generator room, which sucks all the energy from Earth, and she tries to get him to work, but he's like, I'm not going to waste my 1 hour in the generator room. So he goes off to explore, and he finds a literal whole new world. And I didn't know how much of this was, like, fantasy sequence versus reality. I still don't know.
It was all a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, the horses, how do they know how to ride horses?
That's what my question was. Because there's horses, they get on, they ride. There's, like, vegetation, and there's water, and Byrava tries to eat an orange, but obviously he's never seen an orange before, so he doesn't know you're supposed to peel it, and he walks on a beach, and he plays in the sand, and it all makes him cry. And then it's, like, nighttime, and they've changed their clothes, and they go to a party at an opulent palace, and they eat, and they dance, and Byrava almost gets crushed by a falling David statue.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I forgot about the David.
Yeah, that was interesting. And then guards show up to get him. And that's where we leave him.
Yeah.
Because while this is happening, some other complex workers are drilling down through sand, and they find a big golden bow.
Yeah.
Cool.
That'll come up again.
Yeah. We never hear about that ever again. In the women's quarters, Sumati comes across a guard who has repeatedly taunted her, and he gets handsy with her, and she ends up falling to the ground, exposing her pregnant belly. Mm-hmm. He is shocked, and she's able to get his gun and point it at him, and then her friend Lily appears from around the corner, and Sumati asks her for help. But Lily betrays her and helps the guard get his gun back, mm-hmm. and then Sumati gets kind of taken in. She gets reported to the authorities. In Kashi, Raya accidentally catches the attention of a bounty hunter robot. She hides in an ancient temple, but it catches her. And then, as they're tussling on the ground, a giant man sits up from amongst the spider webs and beheads the robot. It's Ashwatthama!
Yay! Huzzah!
Yay! Back at the complex, a new doctor tells Manas that Sumati is the first woman to carry the formula for 150 days, and the baby is growing faster than a regular baby. At this rate, she'll deliver it soon. But Manas tells the doctor to prep her for extraction now, because they're not looking for babies.
Nope.
And that's when I was like, well, what the heck are you looking for?
What do they want, then?
Why are you impregnating these women?
Stem cells? I don't know.
Yeah, right? Like, I still don't know. Sumati gets taken to the extraction machine, but the machine starts short-circuiting when it tries to extract the serum from her. Mm-hmm. And a lot of things happen. The electricity in the complex starts going haywire. Ashwatthama gets a blinding flashback to his deal with Krishna. And the golden bow that was found becomes imbued with forceful energy.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. Sumati then gets dumped into the tunnel that will lead her to the furnace to get burned, which is what they do with all the dead women's bodies. But as she's sliding, she gets saved by her friend Lily.
Yay, Lily!
Yay! They both get out of the tunnel, and Lily apologizes, saying that it was the only way to get Sumati out. It turns out that Lily's a rebel from Shambhala!
Yay!
Woo! Lily leads Sumati to the underground tunnel system beneath the complex. Seems like a security concern, but whatever. And Lily takes out some guards and points out the direction that Sumati needs to take. Sumati is able to escape, but Lily gets left behind.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people sacrificing themselves.
Yeah.
A lot of death.
I kind of hope Lily we might see again, too. Like, maybe
we didn't see her death.
She kind of, like, sneaks away.
Yeah. So Sumati follows the tunnel to an underground room, but when she tries to continue walking, she trips a laser beam that triggers flamethrowers and an alarm.
Oof.
Yeah.
Bad luck.
Bad luck. The worst luck. So she's stuck. And at the temple, Ashwatthama recalls Krishna's words and notices that Raya is carrying the jewel that he used to have in his forehead.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't mention this, but Krishna had told Ashwatthama that when the jewel returned to him, that would be his sign that Kalki needs him.
Yes.
So he puts the jewel back on his head and heads out of the temple, leaving Raya behind. But don't worry, Raya kind of just follows him around anyway. She's yeah. here for the rest of the movie. That's I feel cute. Like she should be special. I don't know.
I'd like to see more from her in the future movies. Yes, that's my request.
She's got big Arya Stark energy.
Absolutely she does.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Sumati decides to walk through the fire yeah. as complex guards arrive to check out the triggered alarm. Her unborn baby protects her, and she walks toward the rebels who are waiting at the outside of this tunnel. Because Lily had notified them before saving Sumati. So the rebels mm-hmm. are there to help collect her. Sumati makes it through the tunnel to the rebels and their truck.
Yay. Okay.
Yay. At the same time, Bhairava, who got apparently out of the complex without any problems.
I know. I really thought that he was going to be put in prison.
Right. Which then I'm like, was that all just a fantasy? What happened?
I don't know.
Whatever. What happened to Roxy? We don't know. She's going to show up in movie 3 and be like, you left me.
She was going to be there for like 70 days, so maybe she's just still in there.
That's true. But, right, so Bhairava's out drinking with some locals. And he's being really dramatic, and he points at a big symbol on the side of a wall, only for lightning to strike it at that moment so that it detaches from the wall. Mm-hmm. And Bhairava catches it, and on the backside is a symbol of God. And a bystander says that God has returned.
Ooh. Ooh.
At the site of the fiery tunnel, Manas is here because the guards who had shown up tried to follow Sumati through the fire. I guess they were like, well, it's not hurting her. But
so Manas they don't have, they're not pregnant with an incarnation of Vishnu.
No. Guess what? If you're not pregnant with an incarnation of Vishnu, don't walk through fire.
It's either that or you're the mother of dragons. Anything else, don't do it.
So true. And guess what? Odds are slim that you're either one of those things. But so yeah, Manas is here to check things out, see what happened, what went wrong. And then he's like, well, crap. No one can find out about Sumati's escape. He's then called on to look at the golden bow. Mm-hmm. And I called him his coworker. It's like another commander guy, Bonnie, explains that this bow was created by Lord Brahma, and the man who knows how to wield it can defeat God.
Ooh.
Manas goes to touch it, but Bonnie stops him, saying no man or machine has been able to get near it without burning up since last night. Mm-hmm. Bonnie then says a new power has awoken. Ooh. So Sumati wakes up in a transport with the rebels, and they tell her that they're taking her to Shambhala. One of the rebels, Kyra, explains who Mariam, the rebel leader, is, and that they've been waiting for Sumati for a long time. The transport then gets stopped by some guards from the complex, and Viran, the rebel leader of this crew, he tries to convince the guard that they're just scrappers, but that ploy fails and they end up having to kill the guards. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, they're not able to kill them before they send out a bounty alert to notify other bounty hunters.
Uh-huh.
And Bhairava is lounging at his house when he gets the alert for the 5-star bounty on Sumati.
Mm-hmm.
And he heads out. Back on the rebel transport, Kyra goes and takes out a hunter because she's like super cool.
Kyra's amazing. And I also yeah. just want to say that, like, all of the powerful and impressive women in this
murdered.
Movie die.
Yeah. That's a and good I was point.
Yeah. And I don't know. I have thoughts about how women are represented in this movie. Maybe I'll save those for the end. But it was pretty clear Kyra was going to die because she was just so
oh,
cool.
Yeah.
And she just kept talking about how excited she was about her future. So.
Yep. Yeah. No, agreed. Yeah.
Yeah.
And her music was also very, like, mischievous and fun.
Yeah.
And, like, upbeat. Yeah. So she takes out one guy, but then another bounty hunter shows up and starts shooting at their car. And it's the shopkeeper from the beginning of the film.
I thought he was just, like, another bounty hunter.
I don't know what his job, like, what he has his hand in a lot of pies, I think.
He's just a bad guy. He's just a creepy-looking bad guy.
He's a creepy-looking bad guy that they wanted to use repeatedly. He knocks out a Jew, the rebel who was in the back with Sumati, but luckily, Kyra's here. She
yeah.
had, like, her bike got destroyed, and, like, she somehow still made it back onto this truck because she's awesome.
She's very impressive.
She also just kept talking about how her name means lucky, so uh-huh. clearly she's gonna die.
Yeah.
But she starts fighting this bad guy, and she's able to kick him out the back of the transport. Yay. But oh no, he catches hold of Kyra's ankle, and he tries to climb back into the truck using Kyra. Sumati and Aju hold on to Kyra's hands, but she lets go and sacrifices herself to blow up the bad guy.
Yeah.
Why?
And of course, he turns out to live. Like, yes. Why did Kyra die but not the bad guy?
It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Because also, Aju could have, like, gotten a gun and shot the bad guy hanging off of Kyra's leg. Like,
that was also what I thought.
Or, heck, pull him in and fight him some more.
Right. Didn't just need
she
to
didn't
die.
She didn't have to, like, whatever. It's fine. It's not fine, but it happened. So the rebel transport continues to get targeted by more and more bounty hunters, and the road ends up getting blocked so that they can't drive any further, so they get surrounded by bad guys. Aju ends up getting shot, and Viron surrenders. And the guards tell Viron to get the woman, because who will save him? But at that moment, that's what you should never ask people. Like,
no.
Who's gonna help you?
Don't leave those doors wide open like
that.
Yeah,
no. Because at that moment, a metal disc flies out of nowhere and knocks the guard's gun away. And Raya appears, suggesting that everyone drop their guns for their own good because her teacher is here.
Mm-hmm.
And Ashwatthama does indeed appear.
He does.
Yep. And he leaps into action, fighting these guards with his big staff. I've said, a la Gandalf.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
Definitely. Like, I mean, yeah, like any sort of old man guide, I think you can make that.
that yeah, with like a staff. And like Gandalf could fight with his staff a bit.
Yeah, he
you know?
Can. Yeah, he's a tough guy.
Yeah. As that happens, Viron gets Aju into the back of the truck with Sumati, and they're all just hanging out in there as Ashwatthama takes out the rest of the bad guys, and then he joins them and bows to Sumati. Mm-hmm. Then there's another bounty hunter who shoots at them. It's just constant.
Yep.
Ashwatthama takes that guy out as Bhairava approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And he's optimistic about his chances. And so Bhairava does a really cool flying flippy move out of his vehicle, takes out a bunch of other bounty hunters in the area, and then lays down in the back of the rebel transport, giving Sumati the look as he says, hi. But in the next second, he says, bye. Because Ashwatthama has grabbed him by the shoulder and he tosses him out into the sand.
I loved it.
And I thought that was very cute. Yeah. Bhairava then pulls his hologram trick, but Ashwatthama is still able to hit him and they fight a lot. And Bhairava tries a variety of methods to get Ashwatthama out of the way, but nothing works. Yeah. Boom. That fight sequence. Also, the fight choreography, I think, is very good.
So good. I loved it. Yes.
Like, there's a ton of fighting in this movie, and it's all actually very interesting and exciting to watch.
Yeah, I didn't get bored at any of it.
No. Yeah. So, kudos. Kudos all around.
I know.
At the complex, Bonnie asks Manas where the serum is that they extracted from Sumati before she escaped, and Manas says that they were only able to get a small amount, and he explains the difficulties of Ashwatthama's existence. Bonnie knows who he is talking about, and he explains that after the gods died, their weapons lost their power. With the reappearance of Ashwatthama and the new power of this bow, it's clear that God is returning, and God is in Sumati's womb.
Mm-hmm.
Bonnie says that they need to keep the baby from being born at all costs. So then, the rebel transport rolls into Shambhala. Some of the rebels are unhappy that Viron brought Sumati here, but then Miriam appears, and she recognizes Sumati as the mother who will give birth to God.
Mm-hmm.
And it even starts to rain as proof that God is coming. Everyone's very excited.
Yeah, I liked the vibe among these rebels. It seems like a great, like, multicultural...
yeah, and they're just, like hopeful. They're just trying to protect the future of the world.
Right.
And, like,
and the future of the world is women.
That's true. The future is female.
Yeah.
You need us, not some creepy old guy in serum.
No.
Anyway, back at the site of the fight between the rebel transport and all the hunters, Bhairava bursts his way out of some rubble. So if you'd been wondering what happened to him, as I was, now we know.
He's fine.
Other hunters in the area blacklist him, seizing all his units and banning him from the complex. Bhairava then goes home heartbroken. He lets the rebel teenager go, whom he's just had sitting in his house this whole time.
I was like, I thought we could have let this guy go already. Why is he still here?
I was like, hadn't you turned him in, though? You've been, like, bouncing around for a few days. Like, it makes me think he was only holding on to him as a plot device.
Maybe. You know?
But Byrava says that he has no one in his life and nobody needs him. But the rebel teen says that the rebels need him, so he'll take Byrava to Shambhala.
Mm-hmm.
We then get a little flashback. Out in the desert, the complex guards are reporting back to Manas, who says that the rebels must have taken Sumati to Shambhala. The guards say that they'll find her, but Byrava happens to be getting led by at this moment by some other guards, and he tells them that they won't be able to get close with Ashwatthama watching over her.
Mm-hmm.
He is the only one who's been able to hit Ashwatthama. Manas agrees to give him one chance to bring back Sumati, and if he succeeds, Manas will personally escort him into the complex.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-oh.
I like that he's kind of a complicated character, though, too. It's like...
Yeah.
You don't always know if you can root for him or trust him, but you want to.
Right. And I will say, at first I was like, oh, whoa, what are we doing? Because it was like the first time skip in that way that we...
Yeah. It got me for a minute there, too. Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, wait a second. But, yeah. That night in Shambhala, Raya asks Ashwatthama about his war thousands of years ago, saying that he must have been the best warrior. But he says no, he wasn't, and he was taken down by the Gandivam, the bow made by Lord Brahma, wielded by a man named Arjuna. Ashwatthama says that there was a warrior even stronger than Arjuna, his brother, who wielded the weapon he now uses as a walking stick. But the walking stick doesn't become a real weapon until it's in his brother's hands.
Mm-hmm.
Wink.
I wonder who that could be.
Yeah, we don't know. We see Byrava making repairs to Buji, and then we also see the gosh darn shopkeeper open his eyes and emerge from the desert sand.
Why, he's like a cockroach. He won't die.
Is someone's nephew? Like, is that why he just keeps showing up?
Probably.
And we also see that he'd put a tracker on the rebels' transport. That's really the important part here.
Yeah.
And the rebel teen leads Byrava right to Shambhala, and a guard starts taking them to see Viran and shares all the good information that the mother has arrived, that it rained, and that Sumati is being kept in the tree. Yeah, well, great. Having learned everything he needs to know, Byrava knocks out the teen and the guard.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
As this is happening, Ashwatthama approaches Sumati and tells her they need to go because it's dangerous to be here. She follows him only for them to encounter Ashwatthama, because there are two of them.
Mm-hmm.
The two Ashwatthamas fight, and one of their staffs breaks. And it's clear that Byrava was wearing a hologram of some sort. The hologram turns off, and now Byrava and Ashwatthama are just fighting again. Buji joins in, shooting rockets, because she's been upgraded. Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Byrava then gets in Buji, which basically turns into a big robot, like a transformer. They're preparing to fight when everyone notices that Shambhala's shields are being shot at by an army from the complex. Manas mm-hmm. is here! Mariam pulls Sumati aside to get her to safety as Manas' army descends on Shambhala and Shambhala prepares to fight. Manas successfully takes down Shambhala's force field and they all launch into battle. Ashwatthama and Byrava are still fighting. This is just happening on its own.
Yep.
Feels stupid because both of them could really be used to fight the actual bad guys.
Yeah.
But whatever.
Too it's busy fine. Fighting each other.
Yep. Classic men. But Ashwatthama manages to take down the giant robot by tripping it up with some rope/cloth.
Mm-hmm.
Mariam gets a bunch of civilians on a ship to escape, including Sumati. Mariam tells the ship to take off immediately, and she goes to fight off a bad guy who's taking aim at the escape ship. She is, like, super cool. She has, like, two whips of energy that she uses to fight. Like, would have appreciated seeing more of that.
I know. Again, a super cool, powerful lady who... Yep.
She's not long for this world. Spoilers. Nope. But she successfully takes this guy down, but then she sees that Sumati followed her off the ship. So now they're both just on the ground as the ship flies away. Mariam tells the escape ship to come back and pick Sumati up, but at that moment, it gets exploded.
Yeah.
That's a real bummer.
Yeah, big bummer.
Yeah, yeah. Sumati tries to run away, but Manas captures her using a mechanical flying rope thingy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mariam tries to fight Manas, but he stabs her. She dies.
Yeah.
So.
R.I.P.
Yep, she was cool. Right after this, Sumati falls from the sky. I'm unclear. I kind of missed why or how, but it happened. Bhairava is able to grab her, and Ashwatthama is able to grab him. So they're all kind of hanging off the bridge in a chain formation until Ashwatthama pulls them both to safety. Ashwatthama then goes back to beating up Bhairava, only to be stopped by a bunch of mechanical flying rope things launched by Manas.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a lot of these things.
He does.
And Manas once again approaches Sumati. He says he wants to kill her right here, right now. But the Supreme said that he will kill Sumati and her baby. So Manas puts her on his ship and flies away.
Mm-hmm.
But then, one little leaf from the living tree that is on fire floats onto Ashwatthama's staff, which falls into Bhairava's hand.
Yeah, it does.
And he transforms! super cool. It is a very cool, very cool moment. Because he is the reincarnation of Ashwatthama's brother. And he's then able to throw all of this super cool golden light at Manas's ship. But it's not just light. It's like force energy. It's power stuff.
Yeah. Magic.
Super cool. And Bhairava flies through the air toward Manas. And he stabs him right through the heart with his weapon. So Manas is dead. Yay.
Yay, bye.
Yep. And Bhairava then picks up Sumati and carries her to safety as Manas's ship falls apart behind him. But then he puts handcuffs on her and tries to escape with her in Buji. Ashwatthama holds on to the back of the ship, begging Bhairava to listen, but Bhairava escapes with Sumati.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little unclear as to what his plan is.
Doesn't he, like, put down the staff or something, and that's when he, like, goes back?
Yeah, he comes back, yes.
Yeah.
Which, it makes sense. It makes sense that, yeah, he shifts back to being, like, Bhairava, and he's just like, okay, we're going. But even then, does he not realize he killed Manas? Like, he killed the guy he made the deal with?
I would assume not. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, like, that would make sense.
Because it sort of seemed like his, you know, he was like, what? What's going on? Oh, she's right there. I gotta go.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. I believe that. It didn't make sense otherwise.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of excited for, like, their little, like, one-on-one experience, because I'm like, ooh, I'd read that romance novel.
Yeah. Maybe they'll have to share a bed.
Oh, no. Oh, it's cold.
Enemies to lovers.
Anyway, Raya then appears, asking Ashwatthama, who was that? And Ashwatthama has another flashback to 6,000 years ago, when his brother saved him from Arjuna's attack. And we learn that Ashwatthama's brother is Karna!
Whoa!
The descendant of the sun!
Yeah.
Which is pretty cool. That's like a pretty cool title.
That's a good one to be, yeah.
Yeah. And that's the end. That's it.
Yeah.
They did the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, good stuff. I mean, yeah, it's a great movie. I think you did a fabulous job with the plot recap. It's a lot of stuff to keep concise in there. I do just really feel like I wanted more from the women in this movie, in particular Deepika's character, because Deepika, we know, is a strong, powerful, confident, fabulous woman.
Yeah.
And her character is nothing.
I'm kind of hoping that they're setting up her character arc.
Yeah.
To become more powerful.
I hope so.
Which would be believable, because I didn't talk about this scene, but there was a moment where they gave her a gun and she could have used it to shoot the bad guy who ends up killing Kyra, but, like, she didn't. And so she was reflecting on her weakness and not using the gun in that moment. So, like, I do feel like they could have, I could see her being, like, a super cool fighter by the end of it. But, like, you're right. They did have other powerful women, but they all died.
They,
like,
all
we
died.
We got three instances of strong women, like, standing up in different ways, being murdered.
Mm-hmm.
So there actually aren't any strong women left.
Yeah. Other than Buji.
Right. Who's a robot.
And maybe Roxy, although we don't know what happened to her.
Right. And then, like, Raya, who's clearly, but she's on the beginning stages of that.
So. Yeah, she's a kid. So yeah, I do have high hopes. I agree. I think that they were sort of setting up that there could be that trajectory for Sumati. like, motherhood is not, like, a frail thing. It's not a passive thing. Like, it's a ferocious thing. And so I'm like, you want to portray her as, like, the mother, the sacred, like, make her a badass. Like, she totally fits within that dynamic, so.
And I wonder if, again, I'll just be really interested to see what direction they take her in for the second movie, because I wonder if having time with Bhairava will bring that out of her.
Maybe there'll be, like, a nice training montage.
Yeah, because, you know, it's like, again, I didn't mention this, but Ashwatthama tells her in that conversation that they have, he tells her, like, well, you're a mother. It's your responsibility to give life, not mm-hmm. take it.
Yeah.
Even if that conversation had occurred with Mariam rather than Ashwatthama.
Oh, yes. That would have been a good writing choice, I feel. Yeah.
Because totally. We actually did not pass the Bechdel test.
No. But we seldom do.
That's very true. That's very true. But it was fun. It was fun no matter what.
Even with all of that, yeah. And we did, again, have some strong female characters. They just all died. Yeah, so let's talk about Karna and who he is and what he's from. So again, the Mahabharata, and yes. that whole tale depicts a dynastic war between two groups of cousins. And so there's the Kauravas and there's the Pandavas.
Right, okay.
Yes. Kuni, she's the mom of the Pandava brothers, including Arjuna, who, mm-hmm. it's funny because, like, all of these names I learned is, like, Arjun, Karn, yeah. So it just, I think it's interesting, like, sometimes there's an A, sometimes there's not, I don't know.
It's kind of like Russian naming conventions.
Yeah, everyone's got multiple names.
For an outsider like me, it's very confusing because I'm like, is this the same person?
Yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, so Kuni, Arjuna's mom, Karna was her first son, and his father was the sun god Surya.
Okay.
But it was, and this, again, this is my, like, bastardization of this mythology. She was a teen mom. She didn't want to keep
bastardization.
She didn't want to keep this baby, so she set him adrift upon the Ganges River.
Okay, yes.
Karna was taken in by a family of charioteers, and despite his noble, godly lineage, was raised in this lower class, lower caste setting.
Okay, that explains the horses.
The horses, yeah. And this characterizes much of his journey. He's constantly fighting for the love and recognition that he deserves, not only because of who his parents actually are, but also because he's really good at stuff.
Okay. is that what the official line is?
He's
really good at stuff.
He's good at fighting. He's good at being an army guy. He's also just, like, kind of a nice guy. He's sort of a tragic hero.
Aww.
Karna is constantly discluded by the Pandavas and all of their, like, allies, and he and Arjuna are, like, always butting heads. They're, like, competing against each other even before they know that they're brothers.
Yeah.
He becomes the natural friend and ally of Duryodhana, whose name I'm not sure how to pronounce, and I apologize. But this is the oldest son of the Kauravas, the enemy, or the other faction of cousins, the enemies of the Pandavas.
Yeah.
And he's also friends with Ashwatthama. So these three, you know, bosom buddies over here.
Yep.
Arjuna has Krishna on his side, though, yes. and that's, like, straight up Vishnu and God and stuff, so, like, he kind of comes out better in the end with things.
Which just reminds me, there's a fun exchange at the end of the movie I didn't go into, but Krishna's like, Arjuna, don't get too, like, big in your britches, okay? Like, which I appreciated. It was like, shut up.
I kind of try to bring Arjuna down a peg. He seems like the kind of guy who might deserve it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Arjuna and his family, like, they win. And Karna dies in the war, and Ashwatthama gets cursed, and so it's, like, all that side of things, like, it all kind of turns out bad for them.
Mm-hmm.
What I think is cool about it all is there's not necessarily the clearest connections of, like, who is evil, who is good, who has the right motives, who has questionable motives. And that's what makes movies interesting. So that's another reason that I really liked the movie.
That is really cool. I'll be excited to see how those dynamics play out throughout the franchise.
Yeah, me too. And that was, I guess, what I would say my research is, was kind of looking into the mythology. But I also just, I wanted to look more into, like, critical reception, as well as, you know, I didn't know if, because this movie is so much about Hindu mythology, like, what's the Hindu nationalist kind of, you know, is there a tie in with that? Spoiler alert, no, but we'll get to that.
Ooh, that's good.
I know.
Well, because I was wondering that myself, and I kind of hate that that's the world we live in. I mean, I do the same thing in the U.S. with certain things that are on certain topics. I'm like, okay, well, what could the angle possibly be here?
Right.
And to me, it just felt like, no, this is just a story that is incorporating Hindu mythology. It's not really pushing an agenda. It's just like, here you go. These are cool stories.
Right. But then it was, I was also seeing a lot of people comparing it to RRR, and I didn't know if that was just like a, these are both Telugu movies that cost a lot of money to make, and that's why we're comparing them, or if it was, but anyway, I don't, I have stuff I want to say before we get more into that conversation.
Okay.
So I started off looking at reviews, which I would say overall were fairly lukewarm from professionals, but everyone acknowledges like the bigness, the significantness. Significance of this franchise and of this opening of this franchise. But I wanted to talk specifically about our fave Anupama Chopra and her review of the movie. I just feel like she's always got a good, like, she meets movies where they're at. She's not expecting more than what they were ever meant to be. I love her.
She's got her finger on the pulse.
She really does, yes. She called this film a first-of-its-kind, groundbreaking attempt to tie Indian mythology to Western storytelling, and acknowledges the huge lift on the part of Nag Ashwin, who wrote the movie, you know, not just the story, but the dialogue, and also, like, he did, like, the whole thing. It was this, like, his whole story was his.
It's incredible.
And also, apparently, it's only his third feature film, which, like, also incredible.
That is, like, a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
Wow.
To, as like, so early new... in your directorial career, very impressive.
Wowzers.
She does talk about ways that the storyline falls flat, and also said that the many cameos pull the audience out of the world every time they happen, which I do agree with. Like, when you have that moment where you're like, oh my gosh, that's Disha Patani, you're not in Kashi anymore. You're back in the real world thinking about Disha Patani.
Yeah.
Not to pick on, like, that's the case for any of these cameos.
Like DQ, for sure.
But she did praise Amitabh's performance, and she used, I really liked this, she called this his angry old man era. Which is perfect. And she does share our hopes that Deepika has more to do in the next movie. She ends by saying that the movie works as an origin story, but next we need bigger and better. Which, again, I think was pretty consistent across a lot of reviews, you know.
Yeah.
This worked to set the stage, but we want to see more from these characters in the future.
Right. Now that we have their background, we don't have to necessarily spend all that time with that.
Yeah.
We want to see active character development.
Right. Yes. Other reviewers called attention to the many, like, references to Western storytelling, which, again, I didn't have a problem with. I thought that was kind of a fun component of it. I didn't think it was derivative at all. They also drew comparisons to other sort of similar attempts at creating a cinematic universe, and in particular, Brahmastra came up in a few different reviews.
Okay, because I actually thought about Brahmastra as well, which we have yet to watch for the pod, which we should sometime, but I wouldn't necessarily group them together, but there is the inspiration of Hindu mythology, and I found this more entertaining.
Yeah. Yeah,
but and I'm also a sci-fi girly, so...
I think a lot of people did, though. I don't think Brahmastra did as well as people were hoping it would at the box office. Simon Abrams, writing for RogerEbert.com, called Kalki 2898 goofy, over-earnest, and just good enough where it counts, and says it outdistanced its competition, i.e. Brahmastra, simply by digging deeper than expected into its patchy lore's rich melodramatic turf. So, you know, there was more to it, there was more lore, there was more character development, even if it wasn't always perfect. There was another review that I read that said that comparisons to RRR were inevitable, and this is, again, where I sort of feel like that idea came into my mind, that maybe there was a Hindu nationalist message behind this movie too. I don't see why comparisons to RRR are inevitable, other than the fact that they came out of the same industry, but like, yeah. One is set in the past, one's a historical epic, one is set in the very distant future and creates an entirely new world.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, I'd agree with that. Like, I don't think that they're similar. My only comparison came when I was thinking about the Hindu nationalist ties to RRR.
Yeah.
And because I was like, huh, is this similar to that? And I was like, no, it doesn't have the same context that RRR does.
Right.
In that way. So that's the only thing. And I was more of like a, this was what I've thought about RRR in terms of Hindu nationalism. Do I feel that way about this movie? And the answer was no. And then that was the last I thought about RRR in relation to it. Yeah.
Well, and so maybe your journey was different from mine, because I didn't know enough to, when watching the movie, have made that interpretation for myself. It was in doing the research afterwards that I realized what it was I was watching. So in my mind, I was watching Kalki and thinking, I really hope that this doesn't have the same messaging, but I don't know enough to know whether it does. So that's why I wanted to actually do the research.
No, I think that's really good, because that was my exact journey with RRR as well, where we talked about it, where it was like, ooh, oof, I didn't really know until you did the research for that week. And I was like, oh, okay, that's good to have some added context.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, for RRR, I kind of stumbled upon that the Hindu nationalist ties and imagery. And by imagery, I guess I don't mean imagery, because it's just the fact that it's not the fact that there's Hindu imagery in the movie. It's the fact that that character is so clearly, blatantly made to appear so much superior to everyone around him.
Yeah.
Again, I stumbled upon that, and it was like, I wasn't looking for it, and it was impossible not to read about it when I was doing my research for that movie. For Kalki, I was specifically looking for it, and I didn't find it. So I think we can say we're in the clear here.
Yeah.
There doesn't seem to be that reaction among critics or fans. I found one rambling Reddit post claiming that it was Hindu national, but it seemed like they were just trying to say that because the movie was about Hinduism.
Right.
It was,
which is not inherently bad.
Exactly. Yeah. It's fine to talk about and watch films about Hindu mythology. It's not fine to say that it's better than anything else.
Correct.
And that's not what was happening here. I found an interesting post on the forum Medium from Ashrujit Basu, noting how Nag Ashwin doesn't have the burden of pleasing the BJP that we do sometimes see play out in Bollywood, being from and making films in a southern Indian state.
Right.
Basu provided bullet points for why he doesn't see the film as Hindu national, including an argument that the villains are also Hindu-leaning. He also said that, quote, this film will disappoint the right-wing political cadre and traditional devotees, leaving them feeling like they've wasted a lot of money. And this then made me wonder, how are the right-wing political, how does the right-wing political cadre feel about this movie? Are they disappointed? And at least in one instance, yes.
That's not a surprise.
Conservative former Congressman Acharya Pramod Krishnam, who, by the way, was a supporter of Modi's building of the Ram Temple in Ayodhya on the site of the ruined mosque.
Yep.
He sent a legal notice to Ashwin, Prabhas, Amitabh, Deepika, and other actors and producers accusing the dystopian sci-fi film of hurting Hindu religious feelings. According to the Indian Express, Krishnam said the film goes against Hindu scriptures, and the legal notice states that, quote, the portrayal and depiction of the story of Lord Kalki is wholly inaccurate and also blatantly disrespectful to those sacred texts which are central to the religious beliefs and practices of a vast number of devotees, and says that this portrayal, quote, will lead to the misunderstanding, misinterpretation, and subsequent erosion of the Hindu faith. Putting a lot of power on this film's shoulders.
I think the Hindu faith's gonna be okay.
I think they're gonna recover from this portrayal. Yeah.
Wow.
So clearly, maybe not clearly, but it seems pretty obvious to me that we can continue to like this movie guilt-free, which was what I wanted to find out for myself. Just give myself permission to continue to be a fan of this film, this franchise, and everything that's to come.
Yeah. Agreed. Awesome. Thanks for, doing the work.
Oh, yeah. I really enjoyed it. You know, it's like, I love our podcast. I love watching all the movies you watch. I love doing the research every other week. But like, this movie I absolutely was crazy about, and I was like excited to do the research and find out all the things. So, you know, I feel reinvigorated after watching this movie.
That's great. Yeah, no, I feel good about it too, because like, I'm not gonna lie, I watched it all today.
Uh-huh.
And because I was doing the recap, it took me probably 5 hours or so.
Yeah.
And it was great. And like, if it were a different 3-hour film, I would have struggled probably.
Yep.
Amazing. Thank you.
Yeah.
Bollywood news.
I don't have any.
I don't have any either, and I think that's okay because this is a slightly longer episode from the long movie recap and everything.
We've had a lot to talk about.
Yes. Moving on to pluggables. Mm-hmm. Follow us at Two White Girls Talk Bollywood on TikTok and Instagram. Do what you do.
Indeed.
Also, consider subscribing to us on whatever podcast platform you listen to us on. You can also leave a rating or review. But as always, thank you so much for listening.
Yes, and thank you if you join us on YouTube and Spotify as well, where we keep our Bollywood Bangers playlists. That's where we add the songs that we love from the movies that we watch. And if you want to listen along with us there too, you can find those links in our episode descriptions, as well as in our Instagram posts on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
So, next week is October.
Yeah, we're entering spooky season.
Our favorite time of year.
Yes, it actually genuinely is. Like, yeah. I love it.
I also love a good spooky time.
The problem is that there's only so many delightfully spooky films for us to watch. But we're going to do our best. We're going to do our best. So
yeah. We may sprinkle in some not-so-spooky movies into October this year, but we've got a few, at least with some spooky concepts.
Yes. Yeah. Really, anything is spooky if you think about it too long.
If you watch it in October, it's spooky. Yeah, so for next week, for our first spooky movie, we're going to be watching Munjia.
Yes. From our friends at Stree and Bidia. Right?
I think it's Matic Industries is the name of the company. But yeah, this is another fairly recent movie, which again, I pat us on the back for being as current as we have been.
Yeah.
On IMDb, our plot description is, a young man's visit to his native village unveils a family secret and a vengeful spirit, the Munjia, who wants to get married. Oh, cool. Good for them. Now the young
Ghosts
man must
deserve marriage too.
They do. If that's their choice, that's what they should have. Now the young man must fight to protect himself and his love from Munjia's clutches. This sounds similar in a sense to Stree.
Yeah. A little different.
But a little different, yeah.
Yeah, Munjia is available to watch on Hulu. The Hulu plot synopsis says, at Chechukwadi, Bitu unfurls the horrors of a vengeful spirit. Reawakened and eager to marry, Munjia follows him like a shadow.
Ooh.
And an eerie ride begins.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
Eerie, spooky, all of these words are exciting.
They are. I'm excited. Yeah. I'm excited. Let's kick off spooky season.
Yeah.
With some not too scary, because I don't actually like horror.
No.
Cute, spooky.
Right. But I trust this production company.
Exactly.
Like, they brought us Badia, they brought us Stree, they brought us Stree 2, which I can't wait to watch. I think we're going to be able to watch that this month, too. So let's see what happens.
Amazing. So until next time, remember, Tollywood doesn't need us.
No.
But we need Tollywood.
And in particular, Prabhas.
Oh my god, Prabhas. Yeah. I said we'd never watch Bahubali, and now I'm rethinking that.
Brought around to the other side, yeah.
Anything could happen.